Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce you to the music you'll be hearing at the festival this summer. For Music at Menlo's 13th season, we'll explore, with a more concentrated focus than in any previous summer, the life and work of one of history's most extraordinary musical figures, the Austrian composer Franz Schubert. In addition to ranking among history's most cherished musical voices, Schubert remains one of Western music's most fascinating and confounding figures. The only composer of the Viennese canon native to that city, Schubert represents a bridge from the classical era to the Romantic generation. Born in 1797, 12 years before the death of the father of the classical style, Joseph Haydn, Schubert lived but an ephemeral life. Beethoven, the composer whom he most revered, was 26 years his senior. Their deaths were separated by just 20 months. But what Schubert accomplished in his short life is astonishing. He enjoyed recognition in his lifetime for only a small part of his staggering output, the gradual revelation in the decades after his death of what he had done is unprecedented among the great composers. In addition to his epic contributions to the piano, chamber, and orchestral literature, his oeuvre of more than 600 lieder revolutionized the genre, transforming it into one of the Romantic era's essential art forms. And as illness forced him to confront his mortality before his 30th birthday, Schubert, who once claimed, "I have come into the world for no purpose but to compose," produced a stream of masterpieces unequaled by many composers over entire lifetimes. Nearly two centuries after his death, Schubert's place in the pantheon is secure, but his music continues unceasingly to offer new discoveries and immense rewards. Audio Notes are designed to enhance your enjoyment and deepen your appreciation of the music you'll be hearing at the festival. I'll be joined by artistic co-director Wu Han, Audio Notes author and producer Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists to offer historical and cultural context and a variety of perspectives on this summer's concert programs. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the concerts.
Concert Program 1, Genius Ignited, summarizes the amazing first decade of Schubert's career, during which he composed some 700 works. We will pay tribute to his major influence, Mozart, with one of that composer's most passionate string quartets, echoed by an early exploration in the same genre by Schubert. This summer's first program also introduces one of the definitive elements of Schubert's artistry, his composition of lieder or art song, featuring three of his earliest and most important contributions to the genre. The program concludes with one of the most beloved works in the chamber music literature, Schubert's Trout Quintet.
According to the musicologist Alfred Einstein, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart enjoyed, quote, "one of the profoundest experiences in his artistic life," end quote, when he first encountered the six Opus 33 quartets of Joseph Haydn, seminal works by the acknowledged father of the string quartet genre, which helped to install the medium at the center of the chamber music repertoire for generations to come. Mozart, enthralled by the approach demonstrated in these works to form and thematic development, instrumental writing, and ensemble texture, set forth to produce an equivalent set of six, not an imitation of Haydn's, but, as biographer Maynard Solomon puts it, extending their implications. The six quartets that would become known as Mozart's Haydn quartets were first heard at Mozart's Vienna apartment, featuring the composer as violist, and with Haydn in attendance, on which occasion Haydn famously remarked to Wolfgang's father, Leopold Mozart,
"Before God, and as an honest man, I tell you that your son is the greatest composer known to me, either in person or by name. He has taste and, what is more, the most profound knowledge of composition."
Mozart later sent his six quartets to Haydn, accompanied by the following dedication.
"To my dear friend Haydn, a father who had decided to send out his sons into the great world, thought it is his duty to entrust them to the protection and guidance of a man who was very celebrated at the time and who, moreover, happened to be his best friend. In like manner, I send my 6 sons to you, most celebrated and very dear friend. During your last stay in this capital, you yourself, my dear friend, expressed to me your approval of these compositions. Please, then, receive them kindly and be to them a father, guide, and friend. From this moment, I surrender to you all my rights over them. I entreat you, however, to be indulgent to those faults that may have escaped a father's partial eye, and, in spite of them, to continue in your generous friendship toward one who so highly appreciates it. Meanwhile, I remain with all my heart, dearest friend, your most sincere friend, W. A. Mozart.
Mozart's father-son metaphor seems curiously close to home when considering the circumstances surrounding the completion of the quartet in D minor, the second of the Haydn set. Mozart worked on this quartet in the days leading up to the birth of his first son, Raimund Leopold, on June 17, 1783. It's even been claimed that Mozart was at work in the same room while his wife, Constanze, was in labor, alternately comforting her, then returning to his desk in calmer moments. If true, critic Eric Blum has credited Mozart's focus to the, quote, amazing power of emotional detachment and the callousness of genius, end quote. 6 weeks later, Wolfgang and Constanze travel to Salzburg, leaving Raimund with a wet nurse from July to October. When they returned to Vienna, they found their infant son had died in their absence. The character of the D minor quartet, the only one of the Haydn quartets in a minor key, is predominantly anxious and unsettled, almost without respite, from beginning to end. But this isn't to suggest that its 4 movements don't offer great textural variety and expressive nuance. The dourness of the first movement, Allegro Moderato, is an agitated one, marked by restless syncopations, menacing trills, and wide melodic leaps of an octave or more, beginning with the nosedive in the first violin that begins the first theme. The third movement mars the minuet's graceful gait with a moody chromaticism, inspired, according to Constanze, by her labor pains. The quartet concludes with a heady theme and variations movement. Witness the rhythmic complexity of the second variation, setting syncopations in the first violin and rolling triplets in the second, atop a steady 6/8 pulse in the lower strings. But these variegated musical characters are better understood as subtly shaded facets of a richly singular expressive statement, rather than as distinct utterances. They're unified by key signature, apart from the andante and the relative key of F major, each movement is in D minor. But they're moreover unified also by sheer compositional craft. Notice the gesture that immediately follows that octave descent in the first movement's opening theme. A trill, a turn, and 3 repeated notes. Now, did you catch those 3 repeated notes at the end? A motif appears at the end of the exposition. On first listen, it's just a seemingly insignificant bit of punctuation, but it bears a resemblance to those 3 repeated notes. And then, the first bars of the gently flowing andante movement reveal this 3-note motif to be the genetic code of the entire quartet, unifying its 4 movements into a cogent whole. The three repeated notes likewise mark the central melody of the menuetto. And appear in triplicate atop the theme of the finale. And so, in its intricacies and, more broadly, its overall emotive import, the D minor quartet demonstrates Mozart's taste and most profound knowledge of composition, indeed. Solomon writes that Mozart's Haydn quartets, quote, permanently transfigured the genre and imbued it with a degree of subjectivity and intensity of feeling that was not again reached until Beethoven's Razumovsky quartets, two decades later, end quote. While acknowledging Haydn's foundational role in the development of a rich musical tradition, this D minor quartet, as well as its five siblings, more forcefully asserts Mozart's place at that tradition's pinnacle. With music by Mozart serving as our point of departure, the program continues with the first work we'll hear this summer by Schubert, his Overture for String Quartet in C minor.
The Overture in C minor, composed in 1811 when Schubert was just 14 years old, documents the composer's remarkable musical childhood and adolescence. When he was 7 years old, Schubert auditioned for Antonio Salieri, the Austrian Imperial Kapellmeister and one of Vienna's most celebrated musical figures. Salieri was impressed with Schubert's gifts, in particular his singing voice, and judged him competent to sing at surfaces in the Imperial Hofkapelle. The following year, Schubert began studying the violin with his father and music theory with Michael Holzer, the organist at the church the Schuberts attended. Holzer was dumbfounded by his young student, saying, "Whenever I wished to impart something new to him, he always knew it already." Another teacher, the court organist Ruzitska, despaired. "I can teach him nothing. He has learnt it from God himself." In 1808, Schubert auditioned for and won a place in the Hofkapelle choir. Perks of the position included free tuition and board at the Imperial and Royal City College, which boasted a high-level student orchestra. Schubert joined the orchestra's second violin section, giving him the opportunity to become intimately familiar with the orchestral work of Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven. Schubert also began taking regular composition lessons with Salieri. Schubert's earliest surviving compositions, dating from when he was around 13 years old, include a four-hand piano fantasy, his first Lied, and other works in genres and forms that would become essential parts of his mature output. These earliest works betray the clear influence of Haydn, Mozart, and Bach, as well as of Rossini, whose comic operas were hugely popular in Vienna during this time.
Schubert originally composed the Overture in C minor as a work for string quintet, string quartet with added viola, a genre popularized by Mozart's six viola quintets. Shortly after completing the work, Schubert made a separate arrangement of the same for string quartet. The overture begins with a somber introduction. The first violin introduces the galloping theme as the overture enters its main allegro section, music reminiscent of the minor key chamber works of Haydn and Mozart. ¶¶ a sure-handed development section and recapitulation, not only testify to the teenage composer's integration of his classical forebears' former models, but moreover reveal a musical imagination that would soon come fully into bloom. His magnificent accomplishments in virtually every other musical genre notwithstanding, Schubert's Lieder, which number more than 600 and set texts by more than 150 poets, unquestionably represent his most significant contribution to the repertoire. While much of Schubert's music went unrecognized during his lifetime, his songs for voice and piano were frequently performed, primarily at the Schubertiads, intimate affairs centered on Schubert's music, and they were cherished by all who heard them. Robert Winter has written that, quote, Schubert's uniqueness lay in his ability to fuse poetry and music in ways that seem not only unique, but inevitable. Schubert's songs can withstand the closest scrutiny because they contain so many layers of meaning and stylistic intersection, end quote.
You know, actually, before Schubert, there was nothing like what he did.
Pianist Gilbert Kalish.
I mean, I've done beautiful, wonderful Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven songs. It was all kind of taking baby steps in a way. The kind of word coloring that Schubert does is like a huge innovation. I mean, it's not that the words and music in Mozart or Haydn were irrelevant to one another, but this is so closely allied with it and so beautifully reflective one of the other. You can have the music and you know what the words are in a way. I mean, it was a kind of unique gift to be able to take words and to fit them with music that sounded so much like what the meaning of the words was.
Schubert's innovations to the art song elevated the entire genre, transforming it from simple domestic fare into a musical form of primary importance for composers of the Romantic generation and beyond. They are his legacy, rightly earning him the sobriquet, the Prince of Song. Schubert's friend Josef von Spaun perhaps best summarized his legacy as a composer of Lieder. Quote, in this category he stands unexcelled, even unapproached. Every one of his songs is in reality a poem on the poem he set to music. Who among those who had the good fortune to hear some of his greatest songs does not remember how this music made a long familiar poem new for him, how it was suddenly revealed to him and penetrated his very depth? End quote.
What makes a song so special is what makes Schubert so special, is that he can say so much with so little.
Pianist Inon Barnaton.
Because, the songs, when you're dealing with such a short format and such an intimate mode of expression, you need to be able to say a lot with very little. And he manages with the most simple change of harmony, the most simple turn of phrase, to completely convey a whole depth of meaning. You get such a complex experience from very simple means. And that's incredible. Some of my favorite Schubert songs are only a minute long. And they can be just a few chords and a simple melody, and they break your heart. And there are very few composers that can do that.
Violinist Aaron Boyd.
For me, Schubert's music is the music that touches me the most deeply. someone I was playing a concert not long ago and for some younger people, and they said, "Wait, what music do you listen to?" "Well, I don't listen to pop." "What do I listen to?" "If I am home alone and want to be moved, I listen to The Lieder of Schubert, because this is the music that touches me the most."
The fall of 1814 launched the 17-year-old Schubert into a period of fierce creativity that lasted more than a year. During this time, he completed 2 string quartets, 2 symphonies, 2 masses, and more than 150 songs. It's been calculated that he averaged more than 65 measures of music each day, without even accounting for a work that might not survive. In the category of Lieder, Schubert obsessed over one poet at a time. One of these was Goethe, whose Faust made a huge impression on the young composer. Schubert's first setting of Goethe was Gretchen am Spinnrade, composed in October of 1814. The text portrays a young woman seated at her spinning wheel, obsessing over Faust's promises.
"My peace is gone, my heart is heavy. Never, but never again shall I find peace. Where I do not have him, that is the grave. The whole world is bitter to me."
Swirling about the vocal line is the song's piano accompaniment, which ingeniously depicts both the spinning wheel and Gretchen's agitation. Gretchen am Spinnrade is widely considered to mark the start of the German Lied tradition. Again, in the words of Robert Winter, quote, "Nothing in the Berlin School or in the songs of Haydn, Mozart, or Beethoven could have prepared Schubert's admirers for his breakthrough Lied, Gretchen am Spinnrade. Not only do its freely modified strophes trace a mounting dramatic trajectory that unites the whole, but the spinning wheel accompaniment serves as one of the protagonists," end quote.
And the large part, his songs are less virtuosic and more simple in a way.
Enon Barnaton.
But as a pianist, are incredibly gratifying because you do feel like not an accompaniment, but an essential part of what's going on in the music. It really is like an incredibly interesting conversation that you're having. It's very rarely literal, but like a lot of these things, it adds a meaning. Gretchen Spinnrade, you kind of feel the spinning wheel of what she's weaving.
Alongside Gretchen am Spinnrade, Schubert's Erlkönig, composed in 1815, represents one of the composer's earliest breakthrough works in the art song genre. The song sets a poem by Goethe, which tells the story of a young boy riding home on horseback through the night with his father. As they ride, the boy, terrified, sees and hears a supernatural being, the Elf King, attempting to lure him away. The boy's father assures him that it's only the fog, the wind, the nighttime shadows. But finally, the Elf King attacks the boy. The father arrives home to find that his son has died in his arms.
So spät, du Schlacht und Wind. Es ist der Vater mit seinem Kind. Er hat den Knaben.
In Schubert's remarkable setting, with the thrilling piano accompaniment providing a cinematic backdrop, the singer manifests all 4 of the poem's voices: the father and son, the Elf King, and the narrator. Each is ingeniously distinguished by its own musical character. Listen, for instance, to this passage, in which the Elf King sings, Come, dear child, come with me. Many a game I will play there with thee. The boy shrieks with fear. My father, and dost thou not hear the words that the Elf King now breathes in my ear? His father replies, Be calm, my child. 'Tis the sad wind that sighs through the withering leaves.
Du liebes Kind, komm, geh mit mir. Ein schönes Spiel, spiel ich mit dir. Manch bunte Blumen sind an dem Strand. Meine Mutter hat auf Kühlen gewandt. Mein Vater, und hörest du nicht, was endlich mir leise verspricht? Sei ruhig, mein Kind, in dürren Leppen säuselte Wind.
The conception of Erlkönig further illustrates Schubert's uncanny genius. Josef von Spahn recalled witnessing the song's creation. Spahn arrived at Schubert's home to find the composer closely studying Goethe's text. Spahn recalls, quote, He paced up and down several times with the book. Suddenly he sat down, and in no time at all, just as quickly as you can write, there was the glorious ballad finished on the paper. We ran with it to the seminary, for there was no piano at Schubert's. And there, on the very same evening, the Erlkönig was sung and enthusiastically received. End quote.
In seinen Armen das Kind war tot.
The Lieder set on Concert Program 1 conclude with the Farala or the Trout, a setting of a poem by Schubert's friend Christian Schubart. The poem describes a trout's effortless escape from the fisherman. Schubert's piano accompaniment vividly depicts both the babbling brook and the trout's slippery elusiveness.
In einem Bächlein hell, das saß in froher Eil, die launische Forelle vorüber wie ein Pfeil. Ich stand an dem Gestade und sah in süße Ruhe des Wolkenfischleins Bade im klaren Bächlein zu. Des Wolkenfischleins Bade im klaren Bächlein zu.
Schubert composed his piano quintet in A major during the summer of 1819, while vacationing in northern Austria with the baritone Johann Vogel. On a stop in the small town of Steyr, Schubert and Vogel visited with a wealthy patron and amateur cellist, Sylvester Palmgartner, who regularly hosted chamber music gatherings at his home. Palmgartner requested that Schubert compose a new work for one of these affairs, specifically a quintet to complement the quintet in D minor of Johann Nepomuk Hummel, scored for the unusual combination of piano, violin, viola, cello, and double bass. It was likewise Palmgartner's request that the new quintet include a set of variations on Schubert's own lead, Die Forelle. The quintet's pseudo-orchestral instrumentation, the piano's vast range, the foundation laid by the double bass, belies the intimate character of its musical content. Its affability, in turn, masks its impeccable craftsmanship. That the Trout Quintet has endured among the most beloved works of the chamber music literature testifies, among others of Schubert's qualities, to the fierce precocity of the musical genius whose, quote-unquote, late works would be those completed in his 31st year. Following a cheerful ascending flourish in the piano, an amiable conversation between the strings prefigures the opening Allegro Vivace's first theme, an utterance disarmingly warm and bright. As it proceeds, the movement is marked most of all by its melodic generosity, featuring no fewer than 5 distinct melodic ideas, each a broadly open-armed tune. Befitting the movement's melodic abundance, Schubert's ensemble writing is equally rich, full of textural variety, and giving each instrument its moment in the sun. The inclusion of the double bass is noteworthy, particularly for freeing the cello to soar, as in the second theme in E major, a long-breath duet between violin and cello. The second movement on Dante, in F major, a key traditionally associated with pastoral settings, extends the first movement's idyllic character, slowed to a graceful serenity. The movement comprises 3 themes, and moreover features further textural ingenuity, as rich sonorities shift before our ears from one moment to the next. Listen as the viola and cello combine to croon the movement's second theme, a tender melody in F-sharp minor, accompanied by a steady pulse in the bass, delicate triplets in the piano, and dotted rhythm highlights in the violin. A contented D major melody follows at the rhythmic gait of a march, but voiced in a gentle whisper, utterly devoid of martial pomp. Schubert jolts the listener out of the second movement reverie with a vigorous outburst to launch the scherzo, the quintet's shortest movement, but with an irrepressible energy packed into its miniature frame. The theme and set of 6 variations on Di Forella that comprise the quintet's 4th movement conjure an Arcadian paradise. This music is so welcoming and unassuming, it might obscure the sophistication of the composer's technique. But here, too, we encounter Schubert's thoughtful approach to instrumental writing. In the first variation, with the bass providing the harmonic foundation, the cello luxuriates in its upper register, in dialogue with the violin. The fourth variation offers the most drastic transformation of the theme, as the music explodes with crashing fortissimo chords in stormy D minor. But the clouds pass as quickly as they came, and the melody ends peacefully in F major, the pastoral key of the Andante. As if following torrential rains, the bittersweet fifth variation suggests the reemergence of the sun. The sixth and final variation returns to the theme in its initial form, now featuring the piano accompaniment used in the original lead. The affable final movement begins with a single bell toll struck forte piano by piano, viola, and cello, as if to rouse the listener from the previous movement's lullaby-esque ending. The movement's rustic central theme follows. An effortless extension of this theme arrives at a buoyant second musical idea, reminiscent of the Di Forella melody. Audio Notes is authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Wu Han, Patrick Castillo, and Rachel Sokolov. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations: Schubert's Quartettsatz and Rosamunde Quartet, and Mozart's String Quartet No. 15 in D minor, performed by the Emerson String Quartet, and Schubert's Das Sie hier gewesen, Du bist die Ruhe und die Götter Griechenlands, performed by Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau and Gerald Moore, appear courtesy of Deutsche Grammophon. Schubert's Overture in C minor is performed by the Oren Quartet and appears courtesy of Erschienen by CPO. Schubert's Gretchen am Spinnrade is performed by Marie McLaughlin and Graham Johnson and appears courtesy of Hyperion Records. Schubert's An die Musik, Elkenich and Di Forella, performed by Christopherin Nomura and Derek Hahn, and Trout Quintet, performed by Wu Han, Philip Setzer, Sin-Yun Huang, David Finkel, and Charles Chandler, and Beethoven Septet, performed by Anthony McGill, Dennis Godburn, William Vermeulen, Joseph Silverstein, Geraldine Walter, Ronald Thomas, and Charles Chandler, appear courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led.